The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
You know, it's getting so you can scarcely believe what you see anymore. And a lot of people see things that they don't really believe even when they see them. Psychic phenomena, ESP, UFOs, and the movie such as The Exorcist. People are really concerned about whether or not there is something extrasensory or spiritual about man's mind. We were talking about UFOs last time, and I was talking about how I myself had actually seen one, and I find out that an awful lot of other, maybe millions of Americans, as a matter of fact, have seen them too. And we were discussing what some of these sightings might mean. Well, let's go on another step and talk about this human body and mind of ours. You know, science doesn't really know it all when it comes to the human body and mind. In our high school classes about biology, we learned that we are anatomical, that we are a human anatomy. We learned about groups of organs and systems. But science is having to find out more and more about the human mind. They must constantly add to their knowledge about the human organism and change their concepts constantly as they learn new things.
An experimental physiology laboratory here in the greater Los Angeles area where we are about to witness a demonstration of a process known as biofeedback. In a small room behind this electroencephalograph, electrodes are being attached to the head of our subject, who is a member of the research staff. Her name is Linda. Linda is attempting to learn to control the production of her brainwaves, trying to voluntarily control brainwave activity. Jay Klug, who is the director of this experiment, will now give us some more details on it.
We're about to begin a biofeedback experiment. I've just completed wiring up our subject in the other room. We've installed a ground electrode for reference on the ear and four EEG electrodes on the scalp to detect EEG brainwave activity. The EEG electrodes include a temporal placement, a parietal, and two occipital placements. This activity is transferred to this room via cabling, and we're now about to select the leads we want to monitor on the EEG machine. To begin with, we'll select which input leads we want to bring into the machine. We'll take a lead between the temporal and parietal, the parietal and one of the occipitals, the two occipitals, and the temporal and occipital. Now, this will allow us to record raw EEG activity. We'll turn the machine on and see what we have here. Basically, now we're adjusting for sensitivity variations between channels to get each channel large enough so that we can detect the types of brainwaves we want to detect. Today, we have some very good recordings. We'll probably use alpha feedback today. Okay, Linda, I think we're about ready to begin feedback now.
Okay.
Today we've decided to use our temporal occipital recording for feedback. We now take the amplified signal from that particular lead from this machine through channel 8 to our filter and driver box up here. We will switch the brainwave frequency from 8 to 13, which is the alpha frequency. Now, this machine allows us to filter the activity that we want, the 8 to 13 cycle per second activity, and then convert this into a signal which can, in this case, drive the display in the other room which the subject is watching, which is a train today, a small DC-operated train. Now, the train will increase speed as the size of the alpha wave increases and will decrease speed or slow down and possibly stop as the alpha disappears. The basic process involved in the biofeedback research that we're doing today is a learning process, much like a basketball player learning to shoot baskets. He continues to practice at it and gradually becomes better. Brainwave feedback, as with most physiologic functions, was thought for many years to be an involuntary process and could not be learned. But we have discovered through this research that it can be learned.
Biofeedback researchers are primarily concerned about the practical applications of their work and are already reporting success in treating such conditions as anxiety reduction, migraine headaches, high blood pressure, drug abuse, and even certain forms of epilepsy.
Biofeedback is just now beginning to be understood more thoroughly, but just as soon as science feels they have understood something a little better, it seems something new comes up they don't quite understand. One of the most puzzling phenomena to be discovered in recent years, and one that seems to hold promise to science, is that of Kirlian photography. It's also called radiation field photography. Now, where normal film, of course, is sensing the light that reflects off an object, Kirlian photography doesn't use light at all, but rather exposes the film by means of electrical fields. Normal photography records that which can be seen with the eye, but Kirlian photography records on film what normally cannot be seen. And the results indicate that perhaps there is more to the human organism, and to other organisms as well, than meets the eye.
John, where did the term Kirlian photography originate, and just what is this process?
Kirlian photography is a description of a type of photography utilizing high-frequency electrical fields rather than a specific lens system, which is customary to normal photography. It was developed originally in the Soviet Union and is named after Semyon and Valentin Kirlian, the inventors of the process. It was brought to this country about 2 years ago and is still under preliminary investigation by us and other researchers nationally and internationally.
Give us a brief description of how the process works.
Yes, it's very simple. All you do is you have an electrode that's pulsed with high-frequency electrical fields. You can vary the frequencies and the various electrical parameters to elicit various responses on the photographic plates. This tells us various information about whatever is being photographed. That's essentially the entire process. It's very simple.
You brought some slides with you today. Perhaps you could give us a brief running commentary on how this actually appears on them.
Yeah, well, let's take a look at them. These will all be fingerprints, and that's how I say this is an index finger here, and it's normal resting state. It's
slightly diminished corona around it. As we proceed to the next slide, it's gotten much brighter. What has changed is that the individual has started to drink some alcohol. This took place a long time ago when we did a study a couple years ago. The next slide shows him as he's progressing into a full state of inebriation, very, very drunk. And the corona around the fingerprint is demonstrating very drastic changes, much, much brighter. This is after about 15 ounces of alcohol, as whiskey in this case. And this is the last slide, showing it in full blossom here, very, very bright. It's changed greatly. This is another slide with two normal fingerprints, and the next slide is going to show the change that has occurred after marijuana intoxication. Again, this photography is revealing the dynamics of various physiological processes in the body, which we haven't determined yet or specified for certain, but they change according to various physiological and medical processes. This is a picture of an index finger prior to being acupunctured at a spot at a great distance from the site that's being photographed. It's part of some experiments we're doing to verify the existence of acupuncture meridians. The next slide shows after acupuncture stimulation, and there appears to be a dramatic change, possibly an increase in the flow of this particular kind of energy, which we really don't know what it is at this point. This is a ball of the foot showing the identical experiment. The next slide will show, again, a dramatic increase in the brightness, a change in the energy flow, indicating some kind of a change in the energetic process of the organism following acupuncture. This is a normal fingerprint taken at an entirely different frequency with an entirely different machine, showing, again, different information. The next slide will show it, same finger, after the individual has contacted London flu. It's a very dramatic change in this case, and these are some of the things we're looking for with this particular process. This slide is similar to the acupuncture slide in that the individual will show an increase after being treated by a psychic healer. There appears to be some sort of an energy transfer process taking place, even though the healer didn't actually place his hands upon the subject. And there we have it, a much, much brighter fingerprint indicating some kind of a change as a result of the healing process.
Next what slide. Is it we actually see in the pictures? Is that energy? Is it radiation?
Yeah, call it energy. We're not exactly sure about the specifics of it. We run a number of tests, and there's a number of different laboratories nationally who try to determine what exactly it is in terms of standard laws of physics and these types of classifications, but there's still a great deal of controversy among this. It's one of the fascinating enigmatic questions, exactly what kind of energy are we working with, and perhaps the next slide is an indication that it is a directly unique kind of energy, because this photograph was taken in the Soviet Union. It inspired a lot of the research originally in this country, because you see on the right side a line, and what appears to be the leaf itself, and actually that has been physically removed, the leaf has been cut. It's called the phantom leaf effect, and it shows that very sporadically, once out of every 400 or 500 tries, we can get a picture of a leaf after it has been physically removed from the main body of the leaf after it's been plucked from the plant. We have duplicated this very infrequently here in this country, in our laboratory at UCLA. This is the American version of this, which we got after 2 years of effort, after thousands of tries. And it shows that on the left side, we have the leaf has been totally incised away in a picture of what appears to be a ghost or a phantom-like image, which would probably be the best evidence to date that we're photographing a unique kind of coherent energy in organisms.
John Riley watched the sandcastle the little girl had built melt away as the relentless tide once again claimed its territory. Too bad they don't last, he mused. It reminded him of a sad song he knew about dreams people have which never come true. He wondered about the plans he and his wife Sandy had made as a young bride and groom. Their life had been good. Their children were grown now and gone. What lay ahead? Just dandling the grandchildren and waiting for the end? Is that all there is? Does life have a point? John knew the uneasy questions. He could know the positive answers. Sooner or later, we all wonder what life's all about. Is all we do in this life a mere sandcastle? Or is there more? One of the keys to fulfillment in life is a sense of purpose, to build something that will last. The Ambassador College free booklet, Why Were You Born?, gives the true answer to this age-old question and reason for human existence. Is life only a sandcastle? Read this vital booklet, Why Were You Born? It will be sent free upon your request. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
What you are about to see demonstrated here today is known as dermo-optical perception, better known to the layman as skin vision.
Mary, how do you feel today?
Fine, thanks. How are you, Dr.
Fine, thank you. Are we ready for our demonstration?
Well, I guess.
This research is beginning to pay off in terms of practical application, hopefully, even in helping the blind to recognize color.
I have here three bulbs, Mary, of three colors. I'll put them in front of you.
Okay.
The colors are red, yellow, and blue.
Okay.
And I'll ask you to select the colors that I gave you as to the bulbs.
This is blue. I think this is yellow, and this would be red.
Right. So I'll give you these three folders.
Okay.
Now the colors there are black, green, and red.
Black, green, and red?
Yes.
Red.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
And I think we call that blue, Dr.
Blue. Fine. Okay. Thank you. That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, Mary. Let's proceed now. And I have some letters here, but I shall not tell you what they are.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you to select and see if you can make a word out of those three letters, please.
Okay. Tan.
Tan.
Uh-huh.
Yes, that's very good. Now, Mary, these, I think, are quite obvious. There are three garments of clothing. Would you select, tell me what they are, and, of course, give me the colors.
Tell you what they are?
Yeah.
Don't you know?
I do, but...
Okay. Pink, yellow, and green.
Very good. That was an excellent performance.
Such questions raised by this kind of an experiment as to what capacities are there in the human mind that are not normally expressed through the five senses are still not really answered.
It gets into the area of ESP and other extrasensory perceptions that are available to the human mind that are not necessarily even of a spiritual origin, but are extrasensory in the sense of our five senses that we know so well. Such cases also raise the question, does man have the potential ability of perceiving information with powers beyond his five senses and communicating that to someone else? Certain experiences in life, which I think we can get into in more depth in the future programs about some possible explanations, indicate that man may have such abilities. For example, a famous Russian once claimed he saw in a dream that his father, who was a fisherman, had been shipwrecked off an uninhabited island in the ice sea. He was greatly alarmed. He finally persuaded a group of fishermen to sail to the island, and they found the body of the man's father. It was a pianist, Friedberg, once went to his teacher to show him a composition that had come to his mind during the night. And both he and the teacher were in for a surprise when the teacher took out a manuscript of a composition which he had written that same night, and the compositions were identical. A girl about 10 years old was walking along a country lane one day when she saw what she thought was some kind of a vision. The vision, which lasted several minutes, was of the girl's mother, who was lying as if dead, on the floor of one of the rooms in their home. She was alarmed. She stopped on the way home, rushing there, to fetch a doctor. On arriving home, she led the doctor to the room where she had seen this vision. Her mother, who had been in perfect health, was lying on the floor, the victim of a sudden heart attack. Only the quick arrival of the doctor saved the mother's life. Now, though such experiences, and many people can tell similar ones, are fairly commonly known, and many people can talk about other similar experiences, a twin that suddenly senses when a twin has died, and so on. There are thousands such on record. They seem to indicate that perception beyond the five senses could indeed exist, and yet scientists are not really convinced. Some have set out to see if there could be amassed experimental evidence for such perception. By far, the most famous of these researchers is Dr. J.B. Rhine, who is still living. It was, in fact, Dr. Rhine who coined the term ESP, extrasensory perception, and gave this term to the world.
Dr. J.B. Rhine, executive director of the Foundation for Research into the Nature of Man, has devoted many of his efforts toward advancing understanding the potential of the average human individual. Dr. Rhine began his experiments at Duke University. His experiments there reached a breakthrough in the year 1933. It was at this time that Dr. Rhine and his assistant were out to prove whether or not this thing we call ESP really did exist. He took a deck of cards consisting of 25 cards. The observer would take one of the 25 cards, which consisted, by the way, of five symbols. I might just explain those to you. A square, a circle, a cross, a star, and a wave. The observer would take one of these cards, study it, remember this is a telepathic experiment, and then wait for the subject to record what he thought the card was. Then he would hold up his hand in response. The observer would then take another card, study it, wait for the subject to record his response, and then hold up his hand. Now, in the original experiment with the male student that Dr. Rhine and his assistant conducted, they found that the young man was quite gifted in this area. With a deck of 25 cards, one would have to score above 20% to take it out of the area of chance. But our young student back in 1933 made 6 to 11 hits. The score was termed a hit. This would put it in the area of between 24 and 44%, taking it clearly out of the area of chance and showing that there was definitely ESP involved.
Dr. Rhine was not the first scientist to investigate this idea of ESP. Actually, the realm of telepathy, you might call it, or telepathy, better pronounced. It was largely due, though, to his painstaking research over the course of many years that parapsychology, which is the study of phenomena such as ESP, became a respected branch of science, would you believe? He and his associates, and many scientists who conducted similar research for him, tested for and on the grounds of statistical evidence, demonstrated the existence of ESP. And the three components of it are telepathy, clairvoyance, and precognition. Now, telepathy is the ability to obtain information from another person's mind by means other than the five senses. Clairvoyance, on the other hand, is the ability to obtain information about an object or a situation by means other than the five senses. And precognition is the ability to predict minor future events. Some people talk of this as prophecy, but only in a very minor form. When Rhine published his first results clear back in 1934, he triggered a volley of criticism from the scientific community, often very heated and sarcastic criticism, primarily because if ESP exists, it would seem to demand that we revolutionize current scientific ideas about human personality and mind and space and time. Gradually, though, as the testing methods became more and more rigorous, even overly rigorous, the scientific community began to realize that ESP would have to be accepted in some form. There still exists, though, certain resistance, as one book written by Alfred Koestler, or Kestler, records, the roots of confidence, it's called. He said, one psychology professor stated that although the evidence for ESP was very strong, he rejected the idea of ESP because he said the idea doesn't make sense. He admitted, though, that this was prejudicial. A famous mathematician said, I find this, quote, ESP, a subject that is so intellectually uncomfortable as to be almost painful. I end by concluding that I cannot explain away Professor Rhine's evidence and that I also cannot accept his interpretation. But the level of respectability that parapsychology has been gaining is illustrated by the fact that in 1969, the AAAS, that's the American Association for the Advancement of Science, approved the application of the Parapsychology Association to become an affiliate. Two previous applications had been rejected.
For 40 years, the Plain Truth magazine has been supplying the missing dimension in education. The Plain Truth is published monthly as a facet of Ambassador College's In the Home Educational Service. It maintains an editorial policy that incorporates this missing dimension in education, biblical understanding. The Plain Truth's timely, informative articles deal with subjects covering success in business, recreation, politics, religion, farming. Each issue not only documents the state of today's society, but offers hope for a better world tomorrow. To serve its more than 6 million readers, The Plain Truth is published in 5 languages and is available without price or obligation to all who request it. Join the growing worldwide readership. Request your subscription to the magazine with a 40-year history of educational service to mankind. The Plain Truth. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
The first question I'd like to ask, this is kind of a clarification. You're both in the field of parapsychology. Now, what is the distinguishing difference, basically, between just plain old ordinary psych 1 that one would get in an introductory course in college and parapsychology? Mrs. Shields.
Parapsychology would be the science or the study of any phenomena that come in without coming through the senses, that don't come in through the eyes or the ears or the ordinary senses that we know. So it's extrasensory or parapsychology, or outside the realm of ordinary psychology.
Now, there are people who are called sensitives.
Yes.
What does that term actually mean?
It means that they are sensitive to certain experiences that most of us don't normally have, such as being telepathic. That is, knowing, for example, what's going on someplace where they are not at the present moment. You might have the impression, for example, and it usually is in connection with someone you know well or you're emotionally involved with. A typical thing would be maybe someone you know is involved in a traffic accident. And you might know this and just feel it in your mind. Well, my brother's involved in a traffic accident, or something terrible's happened to my brother. And you know it, and you feel it, and you feel sure of it. And then an hour later, the phone rings, and sure enough, your brother's been in an accident. This would be the kind of thing, sensitive to that.
There's also an interesting area, psychic healing.
Yes, that's
you
very...
Could you address yourself to that for a moment?
All right. This is healing that has been done since time immemorial. At one time, as you undoubtedly know, the priests or whatever would, whoever served as a priest in the function of priest, was also charged with the responsibility of healing the ill and the sick. And it has always been associated mainly with religions. In latter days, psychic healing has been associated with people who claim to have ability to heal illnesses through other ways than orthodox or standard medical practice. Maybe it was called the laying on of hands. Maybe it was called praying. Maybe they called it whatever they want to call it, a number of different names. But it is shown that some things happen to relieve people of their symptoms and their diseases when some person tries to intercede in some way. There has been interesting research done on this, and part of it involves use of Tyrian photography, which I believe you have discussed on this program before. and the Kirlian photography that was done at UCLA showed that when a healer is actively healing, the Kirlian photography would involve, say, photographs of the hand, the finger, the corona around the finger.
Could be light.
There would be a light emanation from the hand or the fingers. When the healer is actually healing, the size of his corona diminishes, but the size of the corona of the patient increases in size. And they assume that this demonstrates some transfer of energy from the healer to the patient. In other words, something real is happening. It isn't just suggestion or auto-hypnosis or something like this, but a real physical phenomenon is happening. And we're just beginning to have the instrumentation, possibly, to record this incidence.
Dr. Stanley Kripke in Psychology Today made a statement, quote, "I see parapsychic abilities as one kind of human potential. Creativity is another. Now I think that parapsychic phenomena represent a relatively minor part of the human potential. I'm interested in developing them in the laboratory, but I don't really think that they are very important to individuals." Do you agree with that statement?
I strongly disagree with that statement, because I feel that it's just a very new awakening in the evolutionary process, and that at the present moment, probably, psychic experiences don't take up much of a person's day or much of a person's time or thinking. But I think it will, in the future, become more and more and more important. As for potential, I think this is the new world of study, of analysis and statistics and study. In fact, Freud himself said, were he to live his life over again, he would have entered this field rather than psychoanalysis, because it has more potential.
Any way you look at the subject, you really realize there is something there that is not just human. Well, next time we're going to go into the question of whether or not there really is a spirit world, and if so, what kinds of spirits, and what are they like, and where do they come from, and are humans in communication with them? In the meantime, you need to write for these booklets the one on the occult explosion, and just what that means, the incidence of a large number of occultism shops and books and cards and the like, and also this booklet on why were you born. Now here we are, in a world where science has bequeathed upon us the ability to destroy ourselves before we ever found out why we are here. What is your own personal goal in life? What are you doing here? What are you after? Most people have a lot of hazy, vague, unrealized dreams. You can just call them kind of private little daydreams of ours that we sort of hope someday some great, wonderful, magnificent thing is going to happen to us. Matter of fact, there's one fellow that always says, something good is going to happen to you. And I like to think that that's true. Maybe something good is going to happen to you. And you hope it's good. But really, psychologists, psychiatrists will tell you that most people live these things vicariously. They don't really live them themselves. Most people witness and watch and observe and read about and go to movies and enjoy, shoving popcorn in their face, watching somebody else vicariously enjoy the things they've always hoped and kind of daydreamed about that they would like to enjoy. But they themselves don't seem to really fulfill any definite purpose. There may have been never a time in your entire life where you sat down, you just asked yourself, what am I? Who am I? How far have I come? What do I own? What is the sum total of my education? What do I possess? So write for this booklet on why were you born? All you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.